FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and you know, we follow the natural resource sector, obviously. You know, we're very into alternative investing, alternative currencies, but especially precious metals. And you start out in precious metals, and invariably you wind up in mining stocks. And the exposure you get with a mining stock, a quality operation with good prospects and great projects, really, you get that leverage that you just can't get from owning the actual metal. And over the years, done quite well on this sector. It's had its ups and downs for sure. Hopefully, we're in another up cycle. And in our quest to bring you, the investor and the FSN community member, great opportunities, I'm really pleased to bring to your attention another such company. And it's a really unique company. It's got unbelievable management, and they just have so many assets, so many positives going for them. The name of the company is Luminex Resources. You find them at luminexresources.com. And don't forget, click that little mail icon there. Sign up for their mailing list so you can get the latest news on the company, because a lot of things are starting to move quickly. You don't want to miss it. The company, I guess we should say first, it's part of Lumina Group, and Ross Beaty led a group of entities that have really remarkable returns for shareholders. Kind of success story you don't see all that often in this sector. And we're really thrilled to have the CEO and director, Marshall Koval, with us, and Scott Hicks. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, Kerry, I appreciate you having us.
Yeah, I mean, the group's been together now, Kerry, since about 2004. So our key technical people have been together for a long time. I'm a bit newer to the group here at kind of the three-year mark coming up. And Luminex has been trading on its own now for just over a year after getting spun out of Lumina Gold, which is our kind of sister company in Ecuador.
Right. And so Ecuador is an interesting place. Up until recently, the politics really were really an impediment to exploring and making discoveries and developing mines there. But Marshall, things have changed quite a bit recently, haven't they?
Yeah, they changed significantly. We first started looking at Ecuador in sort of 2012, 2013 in earnest. And at the time, it had a punitive fiscal regime. It had hard leftist populist sort of alignment with Venezuela. And prior to that, in about 2008, they had shut down the concession system. So basically by 2012, 2013, we thought things might be getting better. We went in early. We did a lot of evaluation of projects in the country. And kind of as things moved along, sort of 2014 timeframe, the government realized they needed mining for foreign investment. They fixed the fiscal regime and they reinstated the concession system so that by 2016, you could apply for new concessions. And then some of the big moves that happened in the country is Lundin Gold acquired the Fruta del Norte project, and Tongling Mining acquired the Mirador project. And if you fast forward to today, both those projects were commissioned last quarter of last year. So really what you've got is some of the most geologically prospective terrain in the world, certainly the most prospective terrain that hasn't been systematically explored in Latin America. And that sort of led to the boom that we have in Ecuador, where today we have most of the major copper companies in the world. A lot of the major mid-tier gold companies are looking at projects in Ecuador. And since we were an early mover in the country between Luminex and our Lumina Gold company, which has the Cangrejos deposit, that's a development deposit, the combined company, we were the second largest concession holder in Ecuador. And as a result of that, when the majors came into the country, You know, we've done a couple of joint ventures, one with BHP, one with Anglo American on our copper, early stage copper projects. But we have this flagship project called Condor in Luminex, which is a gold project with some copper. And we've made a really exciting discovery in the camp zone at the Condor project. And that's really changed the project. So Luminex, as a management team, we're focusing on Condor right now. BHP and Anglo are operating our joint ventures, BHP at Torquay, Anglo American at Pegasus.
Yeah, and it's great to have partners like that who've really got the resources, because let's face it, there's only so many projects one company can really focus on at a time. So I assume you've had a number of companies looking to do joint ventures with you, and you kind of have to filter it out. You got to kind of prioritize and find the best JV partners you can, because obviously, even though they're committing resources, it still takes your time away from it and your team's time away from other things in the company.
Yeah, and these are great partners, and you know, everybody knows their skill level internationally. They're really good at social issues with community relations, which is a key to Ecuador, with government relations. And you know, we spend a lot of time as a group dealing with the government, helping them along with what they can do to benefit the sector. And really, the key thing is you have to be a responsible mining company. And you know, with partners like BHP and Anglo and our own work that we do, we're pretty happy with our interactions with the governments, local communities, and that's a key. Without that, you can't be successful in exploration.
Yeah, things have changed a lot. I mean, you've been in this business now, Marshall, 40 years, and I guess you've probably forgotten more than most people know, and you've seen a lot of changes in the industry, and this social responsibility concept is one that's really emerged as a major trend and guiding force in the industry.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've been in management, CEO, president of companies in the mining sector since the mid-90s. And what I've seen kind of happen over time is more and more of my time is related to not technical issues, but more making sure that our corporate CSR stuff, our work with the government, and you know, dealing with our employees and communities, that takes up a bigger and bigger percentage of my time. Even though I'm a technical guy with a pretty strong finance corporate background, that's where you have to spend the time, and you have to have the strategy in place. And then you have to have the people in country on the ground to be able to execute. And, you know, a lot of times, for instance, at our Condor project, we're working in an area with a lot of indigenous communities. We're doing a lot of work with the communities to help them with agriculture, health, that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, these people want to be respected, and they want the opportunity to grow economically. They want to see their families develop. So a lot of times they're looking for jobs, and they wanted to be treated well. And, you know, that's a cornerstone to what we do.
Yeah, so it's really changed the whole industry from what was perceived to be an exploitative force, where local communities didn't get a whole lot of benefit and they got a lot of the burden, to now it's a corroborative, you're in it together, you're partners, but it does complicate the process.
Yeah, it makes you spend a lot more time on planning and communication and execution. So used to be you'd go out in the late 70s when I started in the industry, and you go out, pull up with drill rigs, and off you go, you start drilling. But now you have a lot of consultation prior to it, planning, informing the governments, communities of what you're doing, and laying out your plans pretty clearly. So you're right, it has changed significantly. I mean, Scott may have a perspective on this coming from the banking side, the finance side as well.
Yeah, and let me just introduce Scott Hicks. You are VP Corporate Development and Communications, and you got major financial markets experience here. So all of this kind of has to come together, and communications really becomes the most important factor, because if you don't do that right, then the project is really going to run into obstacles that weren't necessary.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, fortunately, when I joined the Lumina Group, we already had a pretty amazing team of Spanish speaking people who'd worked in Latin America here for, you know, the last 20 plus years. So we have a great team on the ground that, you know, can communicate obviously in Spanish and in English and whatever they need to do to get it done. And you know, a great track record really of dealing with permitting, government, baseline environmental studies, and all the things that have become so much more important for investors. And, you know, wherever we go in the world right now, it is it's a topical question. What are you guys doing with the communities? Are you going to have community problems? It's a key institutional investor question before, you know, they'll write it, even think about writing a check.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the great things about Lumina, the group, and your company, Lumina Gold, is your access to capital. You don't have as many of the challenges as some of the juniors do in the sector.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And you know, obviously Ross is the founder of the group here, is continually supportive of all the companies. And, you know, so if, for instance, in the last financing we did for Luminex, when we raised $10 million towards the end of last year, you know, he wanted to take himself to kind of the maximum level you'd want to be at in the Canadian markets, which is 19.9 before you become a control person. So, you know, he did about $3.5 million of the $10 million financing to get him to that 19.9 level in Luminex. And then we're fortunate to have, you know, a pretty diverse group of supportive shareholders. You know, we have an Ecuadorian group that's in and around 10% that is always supportive. Great local support from brokerages here in Vancouver, and really people that have followed the group for, you know, 15, 20 years now.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, you got a significant insider ownership in the company as well. So your interests are aligned with the management's interest, clearly aligned with shareholder interests.
Yeah, this is Marshall. So, you know, I've got about 4% of the company myself, and been involved early. And then I think overall it's about 27% between Ross's ownership and management ownership. So, you know, we're certainly aligned with shareholders for sure.
Yeah, which is always good. Hey, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that these it trades on the Toronto Venture under the ticker symbol LR and on the OTC under LUMIF. And so, plans ahead, what do you see happening for the remainder? Well, we're still early in the year in 2020, but for this year and then going on to next year, Marshall, what do you think?
Yeah, Kerry, let me just focus on the stuff that Luminex ourselves were managing, and the primary asset is the Condor project. So the Condor project last year, it's got about 4 million ounces of resources previously, and they're open pittable, but they are generally lower grade resources. And what we really were focused on is we know that geologically the project had some areas of higher grade gold mineralization. So what we've focused on is pursuing exploration of higher grade material, and that'll help us define a project. So over the last year, we drilled 25 holes in this discovery called the Camp Zone, and it's a very wide, high grade zone where we've had intercepts as wide as 30 meters true width of sort of 5 grams per ton gold. And we have kind of a strike length, a distance of about 1.1 kilometers on the surface. And then we've drilled as deep as 600 meters where the mineralization continues. So we've got two drill rigs going now in 2020. And the idea is to continue and test the Camp Zone. And we cut off the resource estimate. We're going to produce a maiden resource estimate in the end of the first quarter here. And holes 1 through 25 will be part of that. We've released 18 of those holes in news releases, and shortly we'll release the balance of the 25 holes. So the big catalyst for the company is going to be the resource estimate at the Camp Zone. And the idea there, and we believe it's starting to emerge, is that we have high-grade intercepts there that may allow us to define a high-grade project. And ultimately, we hopefully would be able to start developing that. And if you look down the road at a mine life there, potentially, you could bring in some of these lower-grade resources that are just adjacent, Los Cuyas and Soledad and Enma deposits, and they could come into the camp zone at the, you know, sort of the end of the mine life. So hopefully we're at the point after this maiden resource that we can define a project. We've started metallurgy, and if we think the resource estimate looks pretty good, we'll start engineering on the project, and we'll start to move it down the development path. So that's the idea, and that's going to be the focus going forward. And then Scott can probably just give a little bit of update here on the joint ventures, the BHP and the Anglo, what's going on there.
Yeah, so I mean, outside of Condor, Kerry, we've got these two majors working in the background, and you know, obviously similar in the goal that they'd like to find large copper projects, but a pretty different approach to how they've come into Ecuador. And you know, Anglo, when they approached us, really wanted to focus on our largest land package in country. So the Pegasus A and Pegasus B concessions, they're in the center of the country, and they truly are massive. They're about 67,000 hectares there. So Anglo has now been working for a little bit over a year and a half. They've done fairly detailed work, really kind of bottom-up work, you know, rock samples, you know, creek examinations, basically, you know, on the ground geology. And then they've just recently flown airborne geophysics over the whole property. And so now they're targeting about 8 different areas on this large land package. And really, they're looking for large copper porphyries there. And these things typically tend to cluster and appear together. And that's really what they're searching for. Whereas BHP, they took our highest grade copper discovery that we've had found, and that's called Tarki. And that's more of a smaller land package. It's about 5,000 hectares, and they're really focused on one key target there, you know, that we had found that had about 1% copper in surface at outcrop. So, you know, between the two of them, if they were to go to all the way to completion and earn the 60% on both of these respective projects, they'd be putting about $100 million US of capital into the projects between 2018 and 2025. And, you know, and if they find something sooner and they want to accelerate that, they can spend the money faster depending on the success they have. So we're pretty excited to have those two partners working along in the background on these large scale copper projects while we can focus on drilling the higher grade camp zone on the gold side that Marshall was talking about.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of having those key partners in place who are well capitalized and able to move and are aggressive. And sometimes you get these JVs and they just languish, but the earn-ins that you've structured with them really seem to give them a great motivation to go ahead and do this.
Yeah, I mean, I know both of them are excited to drill. We're thinking that they'll be both drilling hopefully by the end of 2020 here. I know Anglo's got all the permits they need. BHP's just doing some geophysics right now for target definition at that property, but hopefully have those guys both drilling by the end of the year here.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. So, Marshall, you've been doing this for 40 years. Obviously, you're kind of hooked on it. What is it about this sector that keeps you going and, you know, really, really get your blood flowing, you know, that really excites you?
Yeah, I think we were talking offline a little bit about this, Kerry, and I think these are large projects. They're complex. They're multidimensional. You have technical, you got finance aspects, you have community aspects, you have government aspects. And for me, I love those kind of problems. They're not all problems. Let me restate that. I love those kind of challenges. And basically, you know, I have a technical background. I grew up in Brazil when I was sort of 12, 13 years old. So I came across the language capabilities pretty easy. So you're dealing with different languages, different cultures. And, you know, all those sort of challenges to me are really exciting. And I think the two commodities that I really like and I think are going to be critical going forward, I mean, gold has, you know, several thousand year history. So gold is always something I'm really excited about in the discovery of gold. And, you know, that's the case with the camp zone. You know, we have the camp zone is literally right under our exploration camp. There's probably been 100 geologists trample over that area. And we had geologists that were smart enough to figure out that there was a deposit there, and we made a major discovery. So that really gets me going. And then in the copper space, you know, infrastructure development, human development, whether it's in China, you know, Western countries, whatever, the need for copper, particularly in the ages when we're looking at electric vehicles, that sort of stuff, copper is such a key thing. So, you know, my background initially in the late 70s was the first major copper company I worked for was Inspiration Consolidated Copper, which is Freeport today. So I've kind of got copper in my blood. You know, I started working with Ross in 2004 with the Lumina Copper story. As you mentioned earlier, we were returned significant money to shareholders. And so I really get excited. And if you look at Ecuador, for political and other reasons, it's been the last systematically unexplored region in Latin America, and it offers huge potential for copper and gold and also some other polymetallics. But it's really exciting to be on the front end of a country opening up like this with such geologic potential. So those are the kind of things that really get me going. And we've got the team, like you mentioned, we have the ability to finance, we have the technical skills to be able to operate. We've done it over again. We've added value to shareholders over and over again through the Lumina Group history. And we're at it again here with Lumina Gold and with Luminex. And those are the kind of things that excite me.
Yeah, and I can understand why, but it's such a roller coaster because it's so complicated. You got so many moving parts, constant obstacles, challenges, frustrations. What's your biggest frustration that you face? Day to day,
a lot of
week
times
to week.
It's helping countries that want to open up their sector. For instance, Ecuador, the frustrations become that it's moved so fast that you don't have the institutional capacity that has the full understanding of mining and how it works. And so sometimes you get bogged down into the bureaucracy of, you know, permits and things that seem pretty basic and rote. So that's one issue. And then you know, you can work through all that. But I think at the end of the day, you have to be an eternal optimist. And I think if you look at the Fruta del Norte, which is incidentally about 35 kilometers north of our Condor project, Fruta came in, Lundin Gold came in, and they kind of blazed a trail to work the way through there. And basically, the Fruta del Norte project showed that in Ecuador, you can permit a project. So they went from a feasibility study to 3.5 years later, commissioning a mine. Wow. Mirador took a little bit longer. It's a larger scale project, but they were able to do the same. You know, they were able to come in, permit a mine and construct it in a country that hasn't had, you know, it's had a smaller mining tradition all the way back to colonial times, but it isn't been a large scale mining country, say like Peru or Chile, you know? So what you see is the stuff that's difficult is the adaptation of the government to these projects and moving them along. But I will say this, Ecuador has super infrastructure. It's got cheap hydropower. It's an oil producer, so they have relatively cheap diesel. They've got infrastructure and airports and good road systems. So, you know, I think day to day, you just as issues come up, you have to be an eternal optimist in this business and you just keep moving forward. You get a roadblock of some sort, technically, whatever, you just work your way through it and you keep your team focused on what the end goal is. And in the case of the Condor project and the Camp Zone, the end goal there is to make a discovery that's good enough that someday will be mined.
Yeah, and that's got to be a great feeling. And I'd imagine, and Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, the watching of the metals markets and their vicissitudes daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly, which is something you have zero control over, and yet to some extent is going to dictate your future, really has to, it's got to be something that you just got to put in the back of your mind and just not think about.
No, I mean, on one hand, Kerry, you're totally right. I mean, it's not something we can control, but obviously the group here were avid watchers of the cycles. And, you know, when all these Ecuadorian properties were put together, Ross and the team had a belief that you know, gold is going to trade up from the $1,150, $1,200 level to a much higher place. And, you know, that's now been proven out, obviously, as we sit here today, you know, between kind of $1,500, $1,550. And we, you know, would be similarly bullish on copper as you see the supply side get more and more challenging here over the next year or two. And so, you know, we kind of have that in the back of our minds, but you're right, it is out of control. And all you can do is, you know, work to have the best portfolio of assets so that when you do see these runs in gold or copper or any of the other metals, you know, you're well positioned for that to happen.
Yeah. So you really got to think forward and really have to think strategically and kind of ignore the day-to-day noise of the markets, because it can drive you to distraction. I try not to get wrapped up in it myself. Scott, with your background in corporate finance, communications, corporate development, what is it about the resource sector, the mining sector, that has hooked you?
Well, I mean, I think the excitement of a discovery is probably one of the most unique things. But I also love all the corporate strategy. I mean, if you think about the area that Condor is in Ecuador, and you look how everyone's pieced together their land package and now, you know, trying to progress and build through partnerships and as Marshall said, you know, with the end goal of building mines, it's really interesting to see how everyone takes a different approach to it to try to get to that same end goal of the mines and making money. So I love the corporate M&A side of it. I love the discovery side of it. I think it is, you know, one of the most interesting sectors, despite being, you know, in the S&P, one of the least represented. But, you know, when you get one of these bull runs or a discovery, I don't think there's much else that's as exciting as this sector.
Okay, and I'll just share something personally with you. One thing I love about this sector, there's no such thing as a 9-to-5 miner, resource explorer. Days, hours have no meaning. And that's why the equity side of it is so important for you guys. That's what I really love, the work ethic of it. I mean, you're out there and, you know, you're not watching the clock when you're looking for gold or copper and, you know, the drills are running. You're not even thinking about it. And that's, I love the intensity of the focus of the industry.
Yeah, there's a bit of an adrenaline rush that goes with that. So you hit that on the head, the nail on the head there. One of the things I want to go back to earlier comment, you know, it's an issue of management teams understanding cycles, not necessarily market timing, but cycles of a sector and an industry. And, you know, you can go back historically and you can plot copper cycles over time. And, you know, there's sort of 7 to 8 year sort of cycles that you normally see, and then gold cycles as well. So I think it's being able to be a first mover and a risk taker, and you know, that's what we were in when we went into the jurisdiction of Ecuador. There were a lot of unknowns. There was the situation where you had an unfavorable fiscal regime at the time, but we knew that ultimately that could change. And taking those risks, but they're calculated risk, right? So that's a big thing. And then cycle timing, like Scott had mentioned earlier, when we were looking at these gold assets we had in Ecuador, we were looking at a sort of $1,050 to maybe $1,200 gold market as we built the company and acquired assets, and thinking that that was a down cycle point, at least 1050 was in recent time, and that, you know, geopolitics, economic issues, all these things, we would see its gold cycle back up. So, you know, we took all those risks and we built teams and we put our own money into it and put all that at risk. And then now we're starting to see a more favorable gold and copper environment. Copper's starting to come back a bit. So, you know, hopefully we've got the cycle right. And the market will do what the market does. So, you know, hopefully we'll be in a rising market as well, and we'll reward shareholders along the way.
And that's a great feeling. I mean, it sounds like you guys are really on the right path. And you want to go take a look at the site, which is Luminex, Luminex resources.com. The symbol on the Toronto Venture, LR, trading right now at 79 cents Canadian. And the symbol on the OTC is LUMIF. Really intriguing play, a definite play on rising copper prices, rising gold prices, and the opening up of a major mining area and a country that hasn't been open to it before. Guys, I wish you the best of luck. I will see you hopefully at VREC and find out more then.
Thanks, Kerry.
Yep, appreciate the time today.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.